And we're holding on Nun Omid Bey's nine lines from the bottom. Line begins, Lo Yiba Inu. We learned yesterday about, we had the story involving two people where one of them expected the other one or the other one's servant to teach him 1,000 different ways to prepare him a certain dish made out of figs. And in the event, he taught him only 800 and he sued him in Basedin. And Rebbe said, you know, look at that. Our ancestors said that they used to know goodness. They used to know these kinds of luxuries, and they've forgotten them. We never even knew such luxuries in the first place. So now that leads us into discussing about Rebbe's own wealth. Which, by the way, you know, we discussed yesterday that we have, we said Rebbe Yehuda didn't want to have any benefit from the world. Not from the world in general, but specifically he didn't want to accept from the Nasi's house, and he remained poor even though he could have had gold coins that came to him at Derech Nes. Rebbe, on the other hand, was saying was very rich. The truth is, actually, we learned in Ksubas that even though Rebbe was very rich, before he passed away, he said that he had actually never had hanah from this world, even to the extent of his little finger, because he had all this wealth, as we're going to go on to say over here, but he didn't use it for himself. He used it to support the other chachamim and to help the Jewish people. So now the Gemara says, Rebbe ovad lo hilula l'Rav Shimon b'Rebbe. Rebbe made a wedding for his son, Rav Shimon, part of the process of making a wedding back then was you had something called a base chasnus. That would be the house or the building where the chasna took place. It would often be purpose built for the occasion. And afterwards, they would give it as a present to the chasna and kala. That would become the house where they'd live. Another point that there's a line over here that some people have the Shitta Bukovetsis and others point out is supposed to be over here is the Loy Azmane Le Bar Kapara. He did not invite Bar Kapara, as we're going to discuss soon. So Kosov Al Beis Gnana. It was written on the Chuppah house, on the wedding house. Esrim Rabba Alfin Riboyin Dinrin. 24 times 1,000 times 10,000 dinarim, so you're talking 240 million dinarim, nafgu al beis gnana dein, was spent on this chasana hall, v'loy azmine le bar kapara, and he didn't invite bar kapara. So that can mean, in other words, that bar kapara himself wrote that on the wall of the place. Having seen that he wasn't invited, he wrote out that message saying, you should know, look how much was spent on this wedding, and yet I, Bar Kapara, wasn't invited. Or it could mean that the Gemara is telling us a factual thing. It's saying that it was written on there that people should know that this amount was written on there. So Marsha Bunz, the first possibility that it means that the Veloy Azmine Bar Kapara is part of the part of the inscription. That he's saying that for all that Rebbe spent, he couldn't invite Bar Kapara. On the other hand, Marsha himself says that he'd prefer to explain that it just means that there was an inscription on there saying that X amount had been spent on it, and then the Gemara is telling us a factual matter that he did not invite Bar Kapara. Now, why wouldn't he have invited Bar Kapara? As we're going to see as we go along in the story over here, Bar Kapara was a badfen. He was one of the great Tanoim, but he also had a great sense of humor. And Rebbe was concerned that he's going to bring about a kind of inappropriate humor over there. Especially, we're going to see soon that Rebbe himself is a very serious person. So he figured that Bar Kapara shouldn't be there in order that he doesn't cause Rebbe to laugh inappropriately. So Bar Kapara says to him or to them or to the people there or whatever. If Hashem does like that for those who transgress His will, how much more so Hashem will give good to those who fulfill His will. So what does he mean by that? So the Mefarish says over here that it means that he was like speaking he was speaking of Rebbe. In effect, the Mefarish says he's calling the Rebbe, you're over Eretzonoi, and yet Hashem is giving you so much, and he's calling him over Eretzonoi for not inviting him. The Mefarish says that, everybody else disagrees with that. I mean, how is Bar Kapara calling Rebbe over Eretzonoi and getting away with it? We find in other Gemaras, I mean, Rebbe was a great honor, but on the other hand, when it comes to the covered of the Nasi and the covered of the Torah, he was machped on it. So there's a lot of different explanations, what exactly he meant by it. Marsha says that it means, look, you have tzaddikim who have good in this world and the next world, Rebbe being an example of them. You have people who don't, they only get Olam Abba, and Rishoyim is the other way around. So he's saying, just the opposite. He's saying, if those who are over Eretzonoi get such great Olam Hazeh, how much more so Oseh Eretzonoi, how much more so people like Rebbe deserve to have an even greater Olam Hazeh. Then he saw that people misunderstood him. So then afterwards he said it the other way around, as we're going to say in the Gemara, which in fact was an explanation. He deliberately said it that way cryptically, figuring that way they'll invite him to the party and then he'll be able to explain himself. And that way he's able to wangle himself an invitation to the party. Gilyan Ashash, Rabbi Akiva Eger over here, refers to a tshuva from the Shavuos Yaakov, where he discusses this and goes into an arichos about it. He also mentions it briefly in his Pirush Iyun Yaakov and Ein Yaakov, where he says this Ovre Ritzone and Oso Ritzone, he's hinting at a story at the end of Matthus, the story over there where Rabbi Akiva and several of his chaverim are visiting the ruins of Yerushalayim, and they see, they're visiting Rome actually, and they see the tremendous wealth and power and whatever and comfort that the Romans are living in. And Rabbi Akiva says on that same line over here, in Ovre Ritzone Kach, those who transgress Hashem's will have so much good in this world, how much more so is being stored up for us Jewish people in the future. And so the Shavuos Yaakov explains that we have over there in the continuation of the story, you have when Rabbi Akiva and his friends are visiting the ruins of Yerushalayim. They see a fox coming out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Rabbi Akiva is crying, and the rest of the Rabbi Akiva is laughing, and the rest of them are crying. And he explains to them that this is a simon of the Geula. Anyway, the point is that Bar Kapara is telling Rebbe, listen, I understand that you're always so serious over the Churban. This Rebbe lived only about 100 years after the Churban, and over the troubles of the Jewish people. But he's telling them, so you're thinking that B'chlau, you're not allowed to be over happy in Olam Hazeh, and then B'chlau is Machlok Tzrishonim when it says, Oslo Odom, Shi Malis Choyk Piv Ba'olam Hazeh, does it mean only after the Churban, or does it mean in general, as long as we're living in an imperfect world, even when the Beis Mikdash is standing? Anyway, Rabbi Kapara is saying to Rebbe, no, you have to think more like Rabbi Akiva and realize that you are perfectly allowed to be happy and to realize this concept of Ovre Ritzone and Ose Ritzone, and don't be so serious by your own son's wedding. Then there's a number of other explanations as well. One of them being the Chidah says that he means that he's referring to people who came to the wedding and were not Mesameach Chas and Mekal. So he's calling them Ovre Ritzone in the sense that they have a responsibility when they're by the wedding to be Mesameach Chas and Mekala, and if not, then they're being over on the Ebishter's Ratzin. So therefore, so he's referring to that even the Ovre Ritzonei are getting so much goodness because they're here at the wedding. How much more so the Oseh Ritzonei? How much more so the people? And he's Bepashtus, then he's referring to himself that are going to actually be Mesameach Chas and Mekala. Then one more explanation that some of the Mefarshim say is, listen, Rebbe, after all, was close with the Roman government. We know there was Antoninus, the emperor, that he was friendly with, and some also other high Roman officials. So, of course, he would have had to invite them to the wedding. So now, Bar Kapara is saying, is it right? You're inviting all those goyim who are over at Sona to the wedding, and you can't even be bothered to invite me? Well, the Gemara continues, Asmanei. So sure enough, Rebbe invited Bar Kapara. Omar, and now Bakapara said, La Oise Ritzonim, Ba'olamazekah. So then, now let's say it differently. Those who do Hashem's will in this world get so much goodness, La'olam Abba, Allah has come and become, how much more so that they will get such tremendous goodness in Olam Abba as well. So either, in other words, now that Rebbe invited him, that he's taking back what he said before, well, as the Mefarish says before, he was trying to insult Rebbe in a delicate way, and now he's taking that back. According to Marsha, now he's clarifying what he said before. And according to the other explanations, then now he's saying that he has nothing further to comment on. In fact, everything has been fixed up, and now the Oseh Ritzonia, which is Rebbe and the other guests at the wedding who are going to have Simchas Chas and Makala, Rebbe, you're willing to invite me, and I'm a bad friend, so therefore you're showing that you do accept that, you do accept that you are allowed to have Schoik by the Mazen and so forth, so therefore everything is good. So now the Gemara continues further on this topic. Yoyme de Vachayich Be Rebbe Asya Puranus Al Alma. Any day when Rebbe would laugh, disaster would come to the world. Why is that? Because Rebbe was, after all, the head of the whole Jewish people. He was having Yisurim on behalf of the Jewish people, and therefore, so in particular, the Shittim Kovetzer says, it was after the Churban. He, more than anybody else, has to have Tsar for the fact that the Beis Mikdash has been destroyed and that we're in Golus. So the Shittim Kovetzer explains, if he would laugh, then it would imply that he's not taking that seriously, and therefore that would cause troubles to come to the world. There's different other explanations, one of them being that because he had Yisurim, so Marsha refers to the fact in Bava Metzia, it tells about how Rebbe suffered many years of Yisurim, and through that, great good brachas came to the world. For example, during that time, it didn't need to rain, and yet the ground was very moist and very fertile. And so, if he laughs, then it takes all that away. Ion Yaakov points out another point as well, that there's the line in Pirkei Avos that says, "Schoik b'kalus yosh magdilin sa'adim la'ovah," that laughter and being lightheaded can induce a person to aveira. In particular, aveira in Gemara terminology usually means things of arayas. So Rebbe, who was called Rabbeinu HaKodesh, his particular thing was to be at the highest level of Kedusha. So he has an extra responsibility to stay away from Schoik B'Kalus Rosh, and if he falls down on that, then there's going to be consequences. Anyway, therefore, Omar Le Bakapara Lo Tavdichon. So he tells Bakapara, the Pashtus, by this wedding, don't make me laugh. The Yehiv Nalach are born Grivi Chiti, and I will give you 40 Grivi, or Griva as a measure, a saw of wheat. So it sounds like he's saying that it sounds like he's saying that will be your reward. If you don't make me laugh, then I will give you the 40 saw of wheat as a reward. Omale, but Bakapara answers, Derech Dichosa, Lechimar, my Rebbe will see, the whole griva, the beina shakilna, that any griva, any measurement that I want, I will take. I'll take as much as I want, and you'll see. So how did he do it? Shakal dikula rabba. He took a big basket, chafya kufra, and coated it with tar. So that way, he plans to use this basket to be able to put the wheat inside it. And so he coated it with tar so that way when he puts the wheat in it, it won't leak out through the holes in the basket. It would also be, he's going to put it over his head, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. So it's like, Marsha compares it to putting on a mask on Purim. And he turned it upside down. So al reshe could mean on the head of the basket, meaning that he just turned the basket over, like as a joke, like even though the basket is upside down, I'm still going to be able to collect wheat in it. Or it can mean al reshe, means on his own head, meaning that he put it upside down on his own head. And again, Marsha compares it to putting on a costume on Purim. The Odal, and he went the Omale, and he goes to Rebbe, and he says to him, Lecha limar al boin bridi chiti dirashina bach. Rebbe, please measure out. Now the point is that according to Marsha, he's wearing an effective Purim costume, so Rebbe won't recognize him, but of course he can recognize his voice. So he says, Leicha limar al boin grivi dechiti deroshina bach. Rebbe, please measure out for me the 40 measures of wheat that you owe me. The Roshina Bach would mean, in other words, the Ran explains that Shehovi Sicha that I lent you. So he didn't really lend it to him. Says the Ran and Tosfos. He was just saying it as a joke. Rashi translates, not Rashi, the Meforish, whatever, translates the Roshina Bach somewhat differently. Sha'ata Chayavli, that you owe me. Whatever the case, so please measure that out to me. How is he saying such a thing? We'll get to that in a second. Achoch Rebbe. So Rebbe laughed at the Omalem, even though, and the Omalem, he says to Bakapara, Lav Azharjach, the Lights of Adchan, didn't I tell you you shouldn't make me laugh? So what wheat do you want? And he still answers, all I want is the wheat that I lent you, that you owe me. He's just saying, the Ram says, he's saying it as a joke. He doesn't, of course, really mean that he expects to get all that wheat. But what is going on over here? So again, there's a number of different explanations, what exactly Bakapara was trying to do with it. So Marsha explains that Rebbe was saying, listen, there was a deal over here. I told you, don't make me laugh. And if you don't make me laugh, then I'll pay you 40 salary. Well, you made me laugh. I don't owe you anything. So Bar Kapara is also answering, he's almost like you could almost say like he's playing dumb and saying that, no, I'm just, there's other wheat. Never mind the wheat that you promised me for not making me laugh. There's other wheat that you lent me that he's pretending that Rebbe owes him. So it's all part of the joke in that case. Good morning, Abby. Holding on, Nunala from Adalas. So again, there's a number of different explanations exactly what was going on over here. One of them, the Rashash explains, based on Gemara and Beitza, we learned it last year, we mentioned it the other day in a different context also, there was a case where a person says, I want Pliny to get 400 zuz of my money, and he should marry my daughter. And the Gemara explains there that we're not saying that only if he marries the daughter does he get the 400. It means the 400 he gets regardless. The daughter, it's up to him whether to marry or not. So the Rashash says the same thing over here. Bakapara is saying to Rebbe, you said that if I don't make, you said I shouldn't make you laugh, and you'll give me 40 saw of wheat, 40 grivi of wheat. But in fact, you misspoke. You said it in such a way where, in effect, you owe me the 40 saw regardless, whether I make you laugh or not. So therefore, I have the right to demand it of you. Another point is also that. So why is Bakapara trying to make Rebbe laugh? If we just said that whenever Rebbe laughs, then Poronus comes to the world, why would he be doing that? So Ben Yoyada explains that we know within Yisurim itself, Gemara explains in various places that there's such a thing in Baba Matsya in connection over there with Rebbe's Yisurim. And in Brachas, the Gemara explains there's something called Yisurim Shal Ahava, where a person accepts the Yisurim of Hashem out of love, and they help be Mechato for people in the generation. And then you have the regular kind of Yisurim, which is not so much. You have Yisurim Shal, they're called Yisurim Shal Ahava. In particular, we have over there the example in Baba Matsya of Rav Elazar ben Reb Shimon, who actually had his Yisurim under control to the point where he could tell them to go away in the daytime so he can learn Torah uninterruptedly and come back at night. When he's not learning Torah anyhow. So Bar Kapara wanted to see if Rebbe is in fact having Yisurim Shel Ahava. If Rebbe doesn't want to laugh and doesn't want to take a break from his Yisurim for even a short time, then that will demonstrate that those are Yisurim Shel Ahava. So therefore you put Rebbe in this predicament to make him that Rebbe is going to say, I don't want to laugh. And therefore, that'll demonstrate that it really is Yisurim Shel Ahava. And that way, Rebbe's schus in having those Yisurim and the schus of the generation that Rebbe is having them on, behalf of them will be all the greater. Okay. Further, the Gemara tells about another story involving Bar Kapara and his jokes. Which again, you know, we're talking on one level, we're talking jokes. On the on another level, as we're saying so far, all of them there's much more depth to them than scam jokes. We're talking about kapara or a tana after all, and we're talking this is recorded in the Gemara as part of the Torah. So there's obviously much more to it than scam jokes. Anyway, Amale Bakapara Lebrate de Rebbe. Bakapara says to Rebbe's daughter, in connection with the wedding, the Pashto is the same wedding that we're talking about. He says, L'macha shasina chamra berikuda da'avucho b'kirkenei de'imach. Tomorrow, you're going to see that I'm going to be drinking wine at this wedding, accompanied by your father's dancing and by your mother's singing. The kirkoni, the Ran translates, mekaukeres and mezameres. Mekaukeres literally means like clucking, like what chickens do, or mezameres singing. So you're going to see that I'm going to make that happen. That's the Ram translates the word kirkoni like that to mean like cackling, and he explains it as singing. The Mefarish explains rather that it means pouring a cup. You're going to see that your mother is going to be pouring me a cup of wine tomorrow. The Ram has the gear the other way around. Your mother is going to be dancing. Your father is going to be also like whirling around. So like both of them are going to be doing different kinds of dancing. Now of course the question is how is he going to listen to Rebbe's wife singing? What happened to Kol Isha? You could say that he doesn't mean that she's going to be singing in front of me. He just means I'm going to bring Simcha to the wedding, and the result is she's going to be singing over there on the women's side together with the other women. We're like this if I wasn't here helping to make a b'dichusa by the wedding, then she'd be too serious, and she wasn't, and she wouldn't be. Now she's going to be singing on the ladies' side. On the other hand, though, you have, Ben Yehoyada explains that it may not necessarily be singing, per se. He mentions that, we know even now, Sfardish women by Simchas, they'll often, instead of singing, they'll do this, and they'll make this high-pitched noise with their tongue, da 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 da. In fact, Ben Yehoyada explains on the basis of a medrash that they did it all the way back in the times of Yaakov and Lavan. The point is, he says that's what we mean over here, so that's not singing. If she's doing that, there's no problem with Kol Isha. But he's saying, in other words, again, that I'm going to be bringing the simcha to this wedding that there wouldn't have otherwise been, and you're going to see that your mother is going to be doing like that, even though usually she's the wife of the nasi, it would be beneath her dignity to act like that, but she's going to. So what happened? So how did he arrange this? So the Gemara says, Ben Alossa chasni the Rebbe Hava. Now, Ben Alossa, that was his name, we're going to discuss him more further down on the Amud. He was Rebbe's son-in-law, but Osher Gadol Hava, and he was very rich. And we'll see later on in the Gemara what's the significance of the fact that he was rich. So sure enough, so he invited Bakapara to the wedding. So even though we said before Bakapara originally hadn't been invited, afterwards they invited him. Actually, when we said before they didn't invite him, one possibility is some of folks should say it just means they forgot. You know, they made up the guest list and they forgot Bakapara, and then he was put out by it. And then eventually they invited him. So he was saying that Ben Alossa actually invited him to the wedding. Omer le Bakapara le Rebbe, my te'eva. So Bakapara asks Rebbe, in connection with the parasha of Arayas, you have in particular, you go through the various arayas that are described over there in the Psukim, and in particular by Mishkav Zohar, it calls it Te'eva. Both in parashas, most of the arayas are repeated in Achrei Mos and in Kedoshim. In Achrei Mos, you have the warnings not to do them. In Kedoshim, you have the punishments for them. So Mishkav Zohar is mentioned in both places, and in both of them, the Torah uses the word Te'eva. Now, there are other arayas in the Torah that are also called Te'eva, but among the arayas, that's unique. That's the only one that word is used. So what's the significance of that word? Why he's asking Dafka about that at the wedding, we'll get to at the end after we go through the various things that he asked Rebbe. So the Gemara says, Kol da'omalei Rebbe, da'ochen hu te'eva, whatever Rebbe tried to explain what the meaning of the word te'eva is and why it's relevant to say it over here, Bakapara was shlugging it up. So Rebbe couldn't find an explanation that would satisfy by kapara what the meaning of the word te'eva is in this context. Amalei parashayat. So finally, Rebbe says to by kapara, you explain it. Amalei. So by kapara says, I need something first. Tasi dvechi. Your wife should come. Tumali napla and pour me a glass of wine. The Ran explains means kli cotton, a small cave. So let her pour me a cup of wine. Actually, on the side of it here, it brings a different girsa, that kli godo, a large kali. Whatever the case, he's asking that that your wife, even though she's the wife of the nasi, usually it would be beneath her dignity to do that. If you want an answer to this question, then the deal is that she has to pour me a cup of wine. How is he doing that? Again, you have the problem that ein mishtamshin beisha. It's not smear stick to use a woman's services, especially a married woman. So again, there's a lot of discussion about that. It can mean first of all, it is true that sometimes there were things that the Tanoim and Amoraim were on a very high level of Kedusha. There were things that wouldn't cause them hear her that would for us, and therefore were mutter for them and also for us. We have examples of it here and there in Shas. It mentions, for example, Gemara in Brachas mentions that Rav Gidor used to sit used to go to the mikveh and instruct women on the actual proper posture for toveling. We learned in Ksubas that Rav Acha would take a kala on his shoulders and dance by the wedding. And when they asked him about it, he said that he doesn't have any hiru from it. So there are such things. So it is possible. On the other hand, Ben Yehoyada says, that may all be very nice, but halacha is halacha. So he says, okay, maybe what it is that she didn't actually give it in his hand after she poured it. She just put it down on the table in front of him. Anyway, so also Sudam Yalei, sure enough, she came and poured him the wine. You see from that, by the way, how much the Chachamim wanted to know a detail in Torah. He could have said, okay, forget about it. So I'll live without knowing what Te'eva means. I'm not going to have me and my wife suffer this kind of indignity. But no, it was worth it to him in order to learn something in Torah. But Rakapara says, that's not enough. I need one more thing before I'll give you the answer. Omalei the Rebbe, kum rekoidi. He says to Rebbe, get up and dance for me. De emaloch, and then I'll tell you. So Rebbe did that. Again, Rebbe is not going to worry about his dignity. And again, the idea with all of this so far, we were saying before that Bakapara, one explanation, according to the Shvus Yaakov in particular, is that Bakapara is trying to show Rebbe it is okay to laugh in Olam Hazeh. Don't think that you constantly have to be serious and constantly sad over the Churban. In your role as Nasi, realize, or like we said before also, that you're a Kaddish, you're Rabbeinu HaKaddish, and therefore you have to be careful about Soit Makalos Rosh, but realize that it doesn't always have to be that way. A Yid, after all, has to be the Simcha. So like this, he's forcing Rebbe into the position of having to dance for him in order that now Rebbe will feel some Simcha. And when Rebbe does that, so Bakapara tells him, Hochi Amarachmana, this is what the pasuk means. Te'eva means Toya Ata Ba. It means you are doing a mistake in it. Meaning, in other words, the Ran says, the person who is involved in Mishkav Zachar is abandoning Mishkav Eisha, the normal relations with women, and going to men. It's an unnatural thing, and therefore the pasuk calls it by the word Te'eva. So one point, in other words, the idea is, the other arayas that I mentioned there, I mean, they're all off limits, of course, but nevertheless, the point is, at least there's a certain logic to them. A person has a taiva for women, and sometimes that taiva spills over into women that are related to him. But, it's not normal that a man should have a taiva for another man, b'chlal. And therefore the pasuk is calling it te'eva, like you're going completely off the way. And getting involved with such things. In fact, interestingly, there's a tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Somebody writes to him, I guess one of his talmidim, that he had been nichshel in Mishkav Zachar and asking him to help him how to do tshuva. And one thing Rav Moshe does is he refers to this Gemara over here and he explains that's what Bakapara means with his explanation of the word te'eva is in fact that there's not even a natural yetzahara for such a thing. A person who is involved in such behavior is actually doing it mitzad rishus. Now, it could be after a while, of course, you know, having done it, he gets more used to it, and it becomes a natural habit by him, but it didn't start out that way. It started out as something that he deliberately brought on himself, maybe he was groomed into it as a kid or whatever, and therefore, you can't say it's a natural taiva, unlike, for example, the taiva of Arayas. So that's expressed by the word toya atabo. Next, continues the Gemara, L'kosahrina, then they came to, they're drinking another cup at the wedding, Omale, and Bakapara turns to Rebbe and says, my tevil, what is another thing that it says by Arayas? It uses the word tevil, specifically, there's a couple of the Arayas that it uses the word tevil, but here we're focusing on where it says by a person with an animal, a man or a woman having relations with an animal, it says the word tevil also on it. Now there's another one. There's another one also when a man has relations with his daughter-in-law. The pasuk also uses the word tevel. So Marashar explains, Bakapara is not asking on that one. There you could say, Rashi says on the pasuk, the word tevel means a mixture. You're mixing up the generations over there. You're mixing up the fathers and the sons zera. Where is this baby from? Ultimately, if they have a baby. But here we're talking about a person and an animal. They can't have children together anyhow. So what's the tevel? Where's the mixture involved? Yeah, Rashi explains on the pasuk, mevalblin zera ab, mevalblin zera adam, zera behema. But still, the fact is, there's no actual bilbul because nothing's going to result from it anyhow. So why is the pasuk using the word tevel on it? Again, omaleki and yonakadma. So the same thing happened like the first time where Rebbe was trying to find different explanations of the word tevel, and Bakapara was shlugging them all up. So again, Bakapara says to Rebbe, do for me what I told you. The Pashto is the same thing, that your wife is going to pour me a cup of wine and you're going to dance for me. So he did it. Omale, and Bakapara explains to him, tevel, who means tavlin yeshva, is there a spice in it? It's a lot in bitmi. In other words, the pasuk is saying for a person and an animal to be together like that, is there a spice in it? Is it something that attractive? Mishanya hoda bia min kolan bias. Is there any difference between this kind of bia and any other? In other words, how do you have that? How would a person have any kind of taiva to not have relations with a person and instead do it with an animal? It's an unnatural thing, and therefore, so the pasuk is saying on it tavlin yeshva. What do you think? There's a spice in it? The Rosh seems to understand it as a statement that we're saying tavlin yeshba. Yeah, it seems that you have a person where they consider beer with an animal more spicy and more exciting than beer with a person.
So after she poured another cup of wine.
After she poured another cup of wine and after Debbie danced, then Vakapara gave this explanation. Yeah.
What's the connection to her giving him wine?
The point is that he was doing it in order, this way, that she should set aside some of her dignity and be willing to serve him, and Rebbe should set aside some of his dignity and dance for him to bring a greater simchas chos and kala. That's what we're saying. In other words, Rebbe and his wife, Mestama, also were very straight laced, very serious people. So now, Bakapara wants to kind of lighten things up a little bit. Yeah. So that's the meaning of the word tevel. Then later on, Omaleo Mai Zima, a third one by Kapara asked Rebbe by a couple of the Arayas. It said the word Zima. Now in simple chat, the word Zima means like a plot, like people plot together to do an Aveira. Now Shaw says that specifically, Bakapara was actually referring over here to the fact outside of the parasha of Arayas, a few psukim earlier in parasha Sedoshim, it says that al tchalalas bitchalazno. He says, don't allow your daughter to be promiscuous. V'lo sizna oretz mala oretz zima. The land will be filled with zima. And in particular, we learned in Yevamos that it means, besides that it means Arayas, it also means that b'chlau, you're not allowed to have relations outside, not only you're not allowed to have relations outside marriage, but also we learned in Yevamos, it means, for example, that a man shouldn't marry a woman in one country and then go marry a woman in a different country because they're not going to know of each other. Eventually, he's going to have children in different places and they may later on meet up and marry without knowing that they're half brothers and half sisters.
Oh, you mean
Naharu? Yeah, so now Bakapara is focusing on that. I understand maybe in Arayas why it uses the word Zima, but why in this, which is not really Arayas per se, it is mutter for a man to marry a woman in one place and to marry a woman in another, just the Chamim are advising not to do that based on this pasuk. So why is the pasuk using the word Zima for it? And the same thing went through before where Rebbe tried to explain it. Again, Rakapara says to Rebbe, do like before. Your wife is going to pour me a cup of wine. You're going to dance for me. Ovad, and again, Rebbe does that because no matter what, Rebbe wants to hear the explanation of this pasuk. The Omalei and Rakapara says to him, the word Zima stands for Zu Mahi. What is this? Meaning, in other words, so when you have, like this, a woman gets pregnant and you don't know who the father is because she was promiscuous, so like we have over here where a man is marrying different women in different places and then people lose track of who the father was, so therefore the pasuk is using the word Zima to represent that Zumahi. What is this?
You can't say that the man has a last name so everyone knows.
No, because in those days, last names were not common. Yeah, but even last names, I mean, imagine, you know, it's one thing if a man has a rare last name like mine, what if the guy has a common last name like Goldberg or something, or Horowitz or whatever, yeah, who knows, yeah. And the Gemara does mention in those places, the Gemara does mention in Yuma in particular, that if the man is a Talmid Chacham, then it's different, because then people will keep in mind that he was the father and they'll be able to keep track of such things. Anyway, why was Bakapara doing all this, and why was he so? We said he wanted to add to the Simcha, but why is he dafka focusing on Psukim from the parasha of Arayas? So the Maharal has an explanation in Chedusha Agadas. He says that after all, by a Simcha, on the one hand, by wedding particularly, on the one hand, a wedding is a place where we're fighting against Arayas. We have the bracha that we say that Kedushin, but also Lano as Arayas. On the other hand, a wedding is a place, sometimes the norms of tznius can break down. You don't have a machitza properly, and you have where you may have women and men dancing together and other such things. So therefore, Bakapara finds it necessary to stress that by a wedding, the importance of how important it is to keep away from Arayas, to keep the high standards of tznius. So therefore, all these three things he's saying, they all amount to saying that Arayas, and Bechlal, not just Arayas, Bechlal, all the pleasures of Olam Hazeh, by wedding is one of the ultimate examples of pleasure in Olam Hazeh that a person is going to experience in their lifetime. And we said before that Rebbe spent hundreds of millions of gold coins on the just on the wedding hall alone. So now Bakapara is stressing with these drushes of his that you should realize that ultimately all the Tanugim, all the pleasures of Olam Hazeh, and all the Arayas are all worthless. Tevo Yeshba, is there a spice in it? It's like as if you have, the Maharal says, like you have, for example, food that you put spices in it, and you're not really eating it because of the food itself, but rather because of the spices. Is that a way to eat? And the same thing, Zumahi, what is it? You're making a mistake and then going the wrong way in it. To realize, in other words, that don't be too much into the pleasures of Olam Hazeh, and particularly Arayas, realize that none of those are really worth much. But the Gemara says, Lo Yochel ben Alasa l'mispal. At this point, ben Alasa, Rebbe's son-in-law, could not stand that Rebbe was being humiliated like that and being made to dance in front of Bakapara over and over again. Come v'nocha kuvah into semi tamon. So he and his wife got up and left the chasana hall. In other words, we're saying Bakapara, on the surface, what Bakapara is doing is standing a badchen at Rebbe's expense. Was saying there are much deeper levels in what he's doing than Allah says, great as he was, and he is after all Rebbe's son-in-law, he couldn't tolerate that kind of behavior. It wasn't his derech and avoda, and therefore he and his wife left. But they couldn't bear to see this kind of thing being done. Rebbe was the one dancing. Bakapara was the one getting him into that. We said before, Rebbe, Bakapara is the one who made Rebbe laugh. We said before, so yeah. No, but the point is, in other words, on the one hand, he wants to make him laugh. He said before, so it'll be Yisurim Shalava. But on the other hand, he wants him to realize that the pleasures of Olam Hazeh are not worthwhile yet. So Ben Alasa couldn't stand that kind of thing. On the surface, at least, Rebbe is being humiliated in public, made to dance in front of Bakapara to hear a vote in Torah, so he finally left. So the Gemara says, my Ben Alasa, what's the deal with Ben Alasa? So the Mefarish says it means, the Gemara's question is, how do we know that he was rich? We said before that he was rich. Now we're going to bring a proof for it. That was Rebbe. That wasn't Ben Alasa. Ben Alasa is the son-in-law.
Oh.
Yeah, he's the brother-in-law of the Chassin. The Chassin is Reb Shimon Berebi. Ben Alasa is his brother-in-law. So the Mefarish explains that the question is how we know that Ben Alasa was rich. Marashah says, rather, the question is, if he was rich, why is he being called only on his father's name? Why is he not being called by his personal name? So the Gemara answers the Tanya. Now we learn in a Braisa. Loy lachinam pizah ben alosa es ma'osav. It wasn't for nothing that ben alosa spent his money. Ella laharis ben hatisporus shokhan gadol. He spent a large amount of money in order to show, whether it was to learn it for himself how to do it, or whether it was to get such a haircut himself, the haircut that the kohen gadol would get. He lived 100 years after the Churban, but at that point, there's no Kohenim Godom anymore. But we know that the Kohen Gadol had a special kind of haircut, as we're going to describe in Gemara in a second. It was very difficult to do. So Ben Alasa spent a large amount of money to learn how such a haircut should be done, or to have such a haircut done for himself.
So it's a zero every day.
No, so that's the king gets a haircut every day, the Kohen Gadol every Erev Shabbos. But we're going to say in a second that there's a pasuk that tells us that it was actually a special kind of haircut. So the point is, Maharsha says, in other words, the question is like this. Given that he's called Ben Alasa, suggests that he himself wasn't rich, that he inherited the riches from his father. So therefore, like his father was Alasa, and he's Ben Alasa, he inherited from his father. Now, Maharsha says, often you have, when people inherit money, they spend it over freely, they don't realize the value, they don't realize, easy come, easy go, kind of, they don't realize the value of a dollar. So now we're saying, though, Ben Alasa was not like that. He knew how to spend his money wisely. He was going to spend it now to learn something in Torah, something which hadn't been practiced in 100 years because there was no business there, but that way it should be kept alive and we should know what it is. So therefore, that's why he's called Ben Alasa, to represent that he was his father's son, and yet he didn't just waste his money on frivolous things. He used it on something appropriate in Torah. So what is that? There is, by the way, Ben Yoyada, I think it is, says an interesting point, that when he's called Ben Elosa, he may have actually been a descendant of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, the Kohen Gadol. Elosa, Elisha, there's a certain similarity, so maybe therefore he had more reason to try to find out how his ancestor, the famous Tana, Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, had this haircut and to be able to copy it. So what is it? The Pasuk says in Yechezkel, the pasuk, in context, the pasuk sounds over there like describing all the kohenim should cut their hair this way. La halacha, it means only the kohen gadol. Some of the mafoshim explain that la'asid lavi, the regular kohenim, will be on the level of the kohen gadol in olden times. Whatever the case, the point is, the pasuk says that kosein yichsimu, they should cut their hair in a way of kosein, which is maloshi kusemis, maloshi spelt. So the way that spelt plants grow. So Tonas, if we learn in a Braisa, Kain Luluyonis. The Kohen Gadol's haircut was similar to the haircut that was known in their times as Luluyonis. My Luluyonis, so what does that mean? Amr Yehud, Spouter Yechidasa. It means a unique kind of haircut. So the Ran translates Kisfotus Noah, a very beautiful haircut. The Mephorish translates Shein Kamoisa, there's nothing like it. The Rambam seems to have another explanation because he says that the way it was done, we're going to say in a second, was that it looked as though there was one long strand of hair going along the entire head. But really, it was made up of a bunch of shorter hairs, one next to the other. So that's a very difficult thing to do. The Ravid asks on the Rambam, but anyway, yeah. I mean, on the Rambam, but yeah. So what does that mean? So, hey, Chidami, Omer Rabba, Roish Shalzeh, B'tad Ikre Shalzeh. It means that the tip of one hair, just touches the root of the next hair. The Hainu Tisfotus for Kohen Gadol, that is the haircut of the Kohen Gadol, so it's a very difficult thing to style the hair exactly like that. So that's the thing. They're not just one line down the head like a mohawk. No, we're talking about throughout the head. It would be like that. So the Rambam understands. It makes it look as though everywhere on the head, like as if you have one strand going from front to back along the entire width of the head, one strand, then another strand, then another strand. And really what you have is a bunch of small ones, one ending and the other one beginning. So it's for whatever the case there. So it's a very difficult thing to do. And so we're saying Ben Alasa spent an enormous amount of money to learn how to do that. Yeah.
To find something for that generation.
To find something for that generation. The Stammer, yeah, it was 100 years after the Churban. There were probably fewer people who remembered it. Bechlau, yeah. Okay. Next. Going back to the Mishnah, we described in the Mishnah that if a person says a neder that I'm not going to eat tavshil, then he's allowed to eat. He's allowed to eat among, so we define that tavshil is right. Something cooked that's eaten with bread. So he's allowed to eat dlas for the mutzah. So now let's discuss that. My dlas on a mutzah. What does that mean? Amashmur kora kaukuzoi. It means a pumpkin kaukuzoi. Most of the Meforshim, the Ran, the Meforish, etc., understand that Kaukuzoi is the name of a place. So it's a place where certain kinds of pumpkins or gourds or whatever grew, where you don't normally eat those with bread. The Aruch gives an explanation that Kaukuzoi means they were round. So unlike other gourds that are long and skinny, or bottle-shaped or whatever, this particular one is round. Anyway, the point is it's not something that's normally eaten with bread. The Meforish adds the point, they never really become fully ripe. So therefore, it's not really very good to eat. And therefore, even if people eat them, they don't eat them with bread. They eat them by themselves.
They cook them a lot.
They may have to cook them a lot, but they still, yeah. Rav Ashi Yom Adlas HaTmuna B'Remetz. Rav Ashi says the word remutza is related to the word remetz, which means hot ashes. It means a pumpkin that you have to bury it in hot ashes, and that's how you cook it. So therefore, again, it's not considered a tavshil, because a tavshil would be something that you cook in a pot or something. So the Gemara says, Eisvei Ravina lo Ravashi. However, Ravina asks on Ravashi, we have a Mishnah in Kilayim, where it's square. Now you have, we know you're not allowed to plant different kinds of vegetables together, that would be Kilayzroim, but you're allowed to if there are two varieties of the same plant, then you're allowed to. So what are considered sub-varieties of the same plant? So the Mishnah goes through various lists over there, and it says, Rav Nechemya Omer, Dlas Aramis, he Dlas Amitzris, an Aramean pumpkin, which is the same as the species that's also called an Egyptian pumpkin, because I guess it was native to both places, Kilayim Imayivonis, is Kilayim together, is Kilayim, if you plant it, with a Greek squash, with a Greek pumpkin, so you can't plant them together, and Kilayim Imha Remutza, and it's also Kilayim together with a Remutza. So you see that a Remutza is, so you see that a Remutza is a different subspecies, because otherwise if it was just any pumpkin that you bury in hot ashes, like Rav Ashi is saying, then you can't speak of it as a different species. So the fact that Rav Nechemya is calling it a different species, a different variety of pumpkin, of squash, whatever, means that it's actually a different one, like the first explanation, the Kara Kaukuzoi. And the Gemara says, Tiyuvta, you're right, that's a contradiction on Rav Ashi. With that said, though, there is, the Yerushalmi talks about that it could actually be both. It's a certain variety of squash which never fully matures on the vine, and therefore the only way to cook it is by burying it in hot ashes. So it's called remutza because of that, but ultimately it is a separate subspecies, and therefore Rav Nechemya can be telling us it's colliding with other varieties of squash.
So you have to have a certain amount of space if you want to plant it, right?
So therefore you either have to put a certain amount of space between them, or Mishnah says, now this we actually have, the first line we have over here was actually in the previous Mishnah as well, so why it's being repeated over here, one possibility is, in order to contrast it with the next part of the Mishnah. Another possibility is the copyists may have meant, it's meant to be a quotation from the Mishnah, and by mistake they thought that it's a new Mishnah. Anyway, the Mishnah says, Hanodim in Maisik Dera, a person makes a neder that he's not going to eat Maisik Dera, Ein Oser Elmi Maisik Resachta. The only thing that he's Oser to eat then is Maisik Resachta, things that are boiled in the pot. So the Ran explains, they're called Maisik Resachta because they need to be cooked for a long time. So, for example, we talked about in the previous Mishnah, we talked about, for example, there are these various kinds of cracked wheat, where they crack the wheat kernel into two or three or four pieces, and then they boil it. You need to boil it for a long time before it becomes soft enough to eat. So that would be called Maisa Resachta. The Mefarish explains differently that it means things that are made from chameshas aminim, things that are made from grain, and the only thing they're done is cooked in a pot. You don't need to do anything else after that. Sometimes you have things where you cook them, you parboil them or whatever in a pot, and then you take them out of there and fry them. That wouldn't be considered maisik deira, so it explains the Mefarish. On the other hand, if he says a konam on anything that goes into a pot that I won't taste, also then he's also in anything that goes into a pot meaning, according to the Ran, meaning even though it's not boiled so long, even though it's only boiled in the pot for a little bit, and according to the Mefarish, that we mean even though it's something that afterwards would be taken out of the pot and put into something else, afterwards it would be fried or boiled or whatever, nevertheless it would be included because it was Yoda Mekdeira, it actually went into a pot at one point. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Hanodimena Yod Mekdeira. When a person makes a neder that he won't eat anything that goes into a pot. The aleph over here is Tagoz Habach, which says that instead of the word sha'ani toyim, it should be sha'ani toyim, that I won't taste.
You said it's part of this lung?
Yeah. Oma konim ayur l'kdeira, sha'ani toyim. Yeah. Well, let's have the word sha'ani toyim, I guess. Oma konim ayur l'kdeira, sha'ani toyim. If he says I won't taste anything that goes into a pot, also b'chol ha'nasi l'kdeira, then he's also in anything that goes into a pot. Meaning, even if it's not full, even if it's not boiled for a long time, as the Ram says, or even if it's only boiled there for a little while and then transferred to some other kind of thing to complete the cooking, like the Mefarish says. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn at a Braisa. Hanodim in Ayur de Lakdera, Osibi Yur de Ilpos. If a person makes a neder that he won't eat something that goes into a pot, then he's also in something that goes into a frying pan. Because you first put in a pot to parboil it, and then you fry it. Nowadays, it's common enough to fry something to begin with, but apparently the minhag in those days was when you were frying something like latkes or something, you would first boil them first, and only then start frying them. So therefore, a prerequisite for the frying was that you first parboiling them in a pot, and therefore it's included in yored l'kdeira. On the other hand. I mean, Ayod of L'ilpas, but if he makes a neder that he won't eat, things that are prepared in a frying pan, Mutab Ayod L'Kdeira, and these loud things that go into a pot because they have nothing to do with the frying pan. Mina Nasa L'Kdeira, now, on the other hand, if he says that he won't eat what was made in a pot, and Nasa, the Ran explains, means that it's completed in the pot. So then Mutab Anasa L'Ilpas, then he would be Mutter to eat something that is completed in the pan. So you first parboil it in the pot, then you transfer it from there to a pan, so it's cooked in a pot. It is Yoda Bakhtera, but it's not Nasa Bakhtera, because it's not completed over there.
He used the word
Nasa, so then that would be different. So then he's Mutter in something that is completed in a pan.
The Nasa is part of the, you get the Nasa without boiling
it. Right, that's the point. In other words, even though you still have to boil it first, but because he used the word Nasa Bakhtera, implies that it's completed in the Bakhtera and needs nothing else. And vice versa, if he says that he won't eat something which is nase in a pot, in a pan, then he's mutter in something that was nase in a pot. Same idea, because it wasn't completed in the pan. Continues the Braisa, Hanodim and Ayod of the Tanur, if a person makes a neder that he won't eat anything that goes down into the oven, Ein Oster Elab Pas, then it wouldn't mean anything that's baked in an oven, only bread. Because the Ran explains, Yod of the Tanner, unspecified, means bread. Being Oma Kol Maisa Tanner Alai, but if he says anything that's made in an oven is also to me, also Mahalan Nas in the Tanner, then he would be also in anything that's made in an oven, because then that would imply anything else besides for bread. Tosva says it, Tzorich Iyun, that it sounds like the difference is. sounds like the difference is between whether he says yored or nasa. So here he says kol maisa tanur alai. Why before didn't we have kol hayored in the previous cases? Why don't we have kol hayored versus hayored? And in fact, the mitzvah I think says that maybe we have to flip around the girsa over here. Maybe it has to be similar to the other ones, that yored of a tanur would include everything, and nasa and kol maisa tanur would be only bread.
Okay.
So usually the word, yeah. Right. Okay. Mishnah continues on the days. Mina kovush, if a person makes a neder that he's not going to eat pickled food, ein osu elamana kovush shor yeret. Then by default, he's only also to eat pickled vegetables. Because again, you have to realize in Darim, the great rule is that you go according to Loshen Bnei Adam. In Loshen Bnei Adam, the word kavush means pickled pickled vegetables. Just like in English, the word pickles, unspecified, means pickled cucumbers. Yeah. On the other hand, shani toyim. But on the other hand, if he said, on the other hand, kabul shani toyim. But if he says a nether that I won't taste anything which is pickled, also b'chol hakavushin, then he's also in anything which is pickled. So now,
So now
it means even more. So the Ran explains because there's a difference whether he said it with the hey or not. When he says when he says ha kavush means the thing that is usually pickled, namely vegetables. When he just says kavush, then it means anything that's pickled. The Ran explains even when he says shani toyim, it would have, even though you would think shani toyim is a stronger word than just that it's osir, it means I won't even taste it. Nevertheless, we still have the same rules that it depends whether we said kavush or ha kavush. And then that explains the rest of the Mishnah goes in the same vein. With that said, there are other explanations. There's an explanation from the Ravid, I think, that says that there is in fact a difference that he explains that with all these words you can talk about, is there a noun or is there a verb? Are you talking about pickle or something which is pickled, or are you talking about a noun, pickles, or are you talking about a verb, something which is pickled? So you can distinguish between those. The noun pickle, the noun kavush, would refer only to vegetables, but the verb pickled would refer to different kinds of things that are pickled. Pickled meat, also pickled fish, etc. Similarly, the Mishnah continues, Minash Sholuk, if a person makes a neder that he's not going to eat food that was sholuk, and we learned at the beginning of the parak that sholuk can mean that it was undercooked, or it can mean that it was overcooked, as opposed to the regular amount of cooking. So then, Eina also element of sholuk shabasser, then the only thing he's also to eat is meat, which is sholuk. Because again, the word sholuk by itself would imply this meat, or ha sholuk, as the Ran says, the sholuk suggests the one thing that is usually sholuk, namely meat, or sholuk, shani toyin. But on the other hand, if he says, I won't taste sholuk, also b'chol ha-shlukim, then he's also in anything which is, then he's also in anything which is cooked in the way of sholuk. Again, you can have the distinction whether he said with the hay or not. You can have the distinction whether he used the noun form or the verb form. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Acha Breder Rav Ivya L'Rav Ashi, Amar Dekovish Mai, Desholik Mai, Detzoli Mai, Demoliach Mai. What about if instead of using the Hebrew words, if instead he uses the equivalent Aramaic words? If he says, the koinam, that which is pickled, or that which is sholuk, or that which is roasted, etc. What would be the din? Heichin mashma. What would it mean? So the question is, the Ram says, if we go by the first explanation that it depends whether he said the hey or not. Well, here when he says dish sholuk, does it mean the one known thing that is known to be sholuk or not? Or according to the second explanation that the Ran said, that the difference is whether he says shani toyim or not. Sorry, I misspoke before. The Ran gives a second explanation that in the first part he just said that koinam mina kavush. In the second one he says shani toyim, which shows that he's showing that he wants to make a stronger issur. I won't even taste. So therefore it includes more things. So then again, the question is, if he says de kavush without saying the words shani toyim, then what would be the deal? And the Gemara says, Tiboy, we leave it as a question. Tiboy is a teku in the rest of Shas. And the Ran says, therefore, we have to be machmer, because, of course, it's a matter of Nadarim, which are Daraisa, and we have to be machmer. The Ran brings from the Yerushalmi, what about if you had something, for example, the next Mishnah is going to mention, about something that was salted? What if it's not salted right now? What if it's something that was salted in the past, and now the salt has been washed off? Would that still be considered Moliach or not? And the answer is, Udiu in the Masechta, we mentioned kibosa maliach, a person might make a neder that this food should be osur to me, like salted meat, meaning like the meat of the korbanos, which is salted, but we had meat over there that, for example, trefa meat or whatever that might be salted, and then the salt is washed off. So we see that it can be called maliach even after the salt is gone. The answer is, if he makes a neder not to have maliach, then it would mean not only something that has salt on it right now, but even something that had salt and then was removed. Yet. So the Mishnah continues in that vein. Minatsui, a person makes a neder not to have hanah from roasted food. Ain also element of sli shalbasser, then he's only also to have roasted meat. Because again, sli, hot sli, suggests the thing that is usually roasted. Same way as in English, if you say, I prepared a roast for you, it means roasted meat. Get rid of Yehuda. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Flee Shani Toyim. On the other hand, if he says, I won't taste flee, also B'cholat Tzloyim, then he's also in anything that's roast. The same logic as before. Again, the Ram's two explanations. Either there's a difference between saying Hat Tzloy versus Tzloy, or there's a difference between saying Shani Toyim or not, or according to the Rai, that there's a difference between whether you're saying a roast or roasted. A roast would mean meat. Roasted would mean anything that is roasted. I mean, I'm a liach. If he says I won't eat any salted food, ain't also element I'm a liach shall dog. Then by default, that means only salted fish for the same reason, because in Loshen Re'odom, so the thing that's salted means fish. There was an interesting little tidbit on it from Oblivi Yitzchak, but his father, he explains that, he explains based on Gematrios that, fish we know are associated with Yosef, but Menashe and Ephraim are compared to fish. And salt has to do with the sphere of Yisoid, which is Yosef's sphere, and therefore particularly salt is associated with fish more than with any other food. On the other hand, Moliach Shani Toyim. On the other hand, if he says I won't taste Moliach, also B'chol Moluchim, then he's also in all kinds of salted food. Same idea as before.
Yosef, what did you say?
That Yosef is the sphere of Yisoid, and then salt, he explains based on Gematrios and the letters and the words or whatever, it was also associated with the midah of Yisoid. Among other things, he explained the word melach, salt, can be broken down into mol ches. Mol, as in mila, ches, on the eighth day, which is the part of the body associated with Yisoid. So therefore, there's a certain association with salt and fish more than any other kind of food. Okay, Mishnah continues.
Even though meat had to always be salted.
Meat has to be salted for kashrus, but technically it doesn't. You could roast it instead. But
Karbanos
were salted fine, but when they burnt them on the parts that are salted are burnt on the mizbeach. But in common terminology, when people spoke of something salted, they meant fish. Mishnah continues. Dogim shani toyim. What if he says fishes that I won't taste? Now the Ran explains it means that he said both expressions. He said dog and doggy. So then, also behen bein gdolim bein ktanim. Then he will be also in all kinds of fish. Bein gdolim bein ktanim, whether big fish or small fish. The point is, dog suggests big fish because you sell them individually. Doggim suggests small fishes where you sell them a pound or a container or whatever at a time. But now when he said dog and dogim, then he's also in all of them. Ben meluchin ben tfelim, whether they're salted or unsalted. Ben chayim ben mevushalim, whether they're raw or cooked. Umutter betris trufa. On the other hand, he will be mutter to eat tris, which is mashed up. So tris, in various places in Shas, Rashi explains that tris is something like tuna fish. So now, you know, even now, people don't eat tuna whole. I mean, they could, I suppose, but generally you mash it up, like you buy tuna in cans. So now when a person says dog, so even though he said dog or dogim, that implies only when the fish are whole, not when they're minced. So therefore, he would be mutter to eat tuna fish.
It's the same thing.
No, but that's the point, in other words. So dogim would suggest he's not allowed to eat fish that come whole. So whether it's large fish, whether it's small, whether it's large fish, whether it's small fish like anchovies or sardines or whatever, would all be also to him. But not be. It was, but now when he buys it, it's already minced. Or maybe even he bought it whole and now it's minced. Whatever. The point is, now it's not in the category of doggy. Over tzir, he is also allowed to eat tzir, which is the juice that exudes from the fish. When you salt fish, that juice oozes out of them, and that juice is called tzir. So he's certainly allowed that, because that's certainly not the fish itself. The Mefarish adds he would certainly be allowed to eat murias, where murias is a liquid made from the fat of the fish. So again, the idea is not the fish itself. The Ran mentions that also. Yeah, that's kol shekein shemutar b'murias. He would certainly be allowed murias. Yeah. Now, if a person makes a neder not to eat sachna, which is when you have literally the word sachna comes from a shodesh that means smelly, because fish have a very strong fishy smell. But here, what it means is, in other words, the Ran explained, you have many small fish that are salted together. Some of them are broken up. Most of them are whole. So, like, for example, you buy a can of sardines. Most of them are whole. Some of them are broken up. So now, since some of them are broken up, And he said minatzahna, which means that he wants to include the case where fish are broken up. Unlike previous one where he said dog dogin, which suggests only whole fish, sahna includes broken up fish as well. So now, also with tris trufa, now he will be also to eat minced fish. Now he will be also to eat tuna fish. Umutter, but sir of amuyas, however, he will be mutter to eat sir and muyas, various juices that come from the fish. Hanoidim with tris trufa, and one more, he makes a neder not to have minced fish, also with sir of amuyas, then he's also in the sir and the muyas, because those are included in the minced fish. When you have tuna fish, for example, you also have the juice that comes with it. And that would also, and then therefore that would be also to him as well. And the Ran explains that when he makes the neder not to have tris trufa, he's actually only going to be also, and when it comes to tzachna, he's not going to be also in all of it, because the tzachna itself includes some broken up ones and some whole ones. So fakir, he said only he's also to eat tris trufa, implying that he'll be able to eat whole ones. So even when he opens a can of sardines, for example, and finds some whole ones and some broken ones, he'll be allowed to eat the whole ones. Those are not included in the neder at all. The chiddush is, though, that you would think he only made the neder of sahna, of tris, which is minced up very, very finely. Maybe he should also be also in the tzir and the muryas. Actually, the Ran has the girsa mutter tzir and the muryas, that he's mutter in them, not like the girsa we have in front of us in the Mishnah also, because even though it's minced very finely, still the tzir and the muryas are not included. Okay, we'll leave the Gemara for tomorrow, that's the
end. Oh, that's it?
Yeah. Shabbat shalom, everyone.